This reading this evening is taken from 3 John. I'll be reading verses 1 through 8. 3 John, verses 1 through 8. The elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you do well. Because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers of the truth.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Sometimes my daughter has separation anxiety, I think. Doesn't like me to be too far away. For this month, we're going to be looking at 3 John, if you turn your Bibles over there, 3 John. We actually find three individuals, primary individuals, that are mentioned in 3 John, and I actually decided to kind of focus on each of those. But we have Gaius, Diotrephes, and Demetrius. And I want to kind of focus on each of those individuals and just take what the Bible kind of gives us. And each one, there's a little bit more perhaps than others, but three individuals mentioned, three individuals that we'll try to focus a little bit upon. You know, once we hit 3 John, a lot of the arguments that we looked at for the writer in 1 John, 2 John also apply. Certainly we have a commonality. We have a common start point, we have a common writing, we have a lot of these, and I do believe that we are dealing with John, although there are individuals that dispute that today, but I do believe it's John. We've looked at that title, the elder, and I really do believe that this is not a position as much as it is as the age of the individual, but when we go through 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, you really get the feeling that John, I believe, writing this, he does carry a lot of authority and weight. And we know that an elder's authority does not go beyond individual congregation, and I think it's really tying more to John being an apostle and his authority in that respect. Because the things he writes, really, they have an authoritative type of tone that we can pick up in the Gospel of John, but also, I believe, in these letters as well. But as we start to look at the letter, we really have an epistle here, I believe a personal letter, to John's good friend Gaius, which can be pronounced Gaius as well. People go back and forth between the Latin and the English. How would it more likely be pronounced? I'll probably go with Gaius unless I forget and then pronounce it another way. But you'll know who I'm talking about. But I believe that this is a personal letter from John to Gaius. And he is going to really have a lot of compliments in terms of the way that Gaius is living his life. We're going to see a lot of connections, but I think John really loved Gaius in respect to he was living a good life. And we're going to see that really unfold in these first 8 verses that we're going to look at this evening. As we're going to see that really unfold. A faithful individual, individual clinging to the truth, whom I love in truth, and we certainly see some of those encouragements and some of those words that are going to be said. But sometimes, a lot of times individuals say, well, I don't teach. But we can really teach through example. And I think that that is one thing that we're going to see, is that we're going to see a couple different individuals, and we're going to see the way that they live their lives and how it impacts individuals that are around them. But I think we see an encouraging letter, not only against false teachers, but also an encouraging letter in terms of conduct, but also a warning against false teaching. But I think we're going to see this idea of hospitality that unfolds. Even though the hospitality isn't said directly, I think we're going to see that we have hospitality here in the letter, and a hospitality type of attitude is one that is being complimented. In fact, we're going to see Diotrephes is actually the opposite. Is Diotrephes is really not opening and being as hospitable as he should, and we see that that unfolds and has some really negative effects on the church. And by keeping back that fellowship and that idea of extending a helpful hand and helping people along their way. But when I start to think about hospitality, there's certainly a lot of things that could fall underneath that banner. But I think about hospitality, there's a lot of things that can fall underneath that umbrella, being welcoming, certainly a lot of things that can fall underneath that. But in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24, it says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. And I think about that a lot when it comes to hospitality. You know, a lot of times individuals will say, well, I don't feel like I feel very welcome many times. And I think about, well, how do you conduct yourself towards other people? Because I find that people that are very friendly have a lot of friends. I find that as a general rule in life. And if you are friendly, you're going to attract some friends. You're going to attract some relationships. And I think that Christians should be on the course of trying to develop as many friendships as we can. And certainly there's barriers that we have to put up in our lives from time to time. But in terms of hospitality, are you a friendly person? And I think we're going to see that unfold here. That Gaius is going to be commended for his generosity, and I think underneath the banner of hospitality. So let's start looking at the letter and see it unfold. We're going to try to cover the first 8 verses. But there in the first few verses, verses 1 through 4, it says, the elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. We start to see an opening to this, and we see, I believe, the closeness between, I believe, John and Gaius. And we see that connection. And although I try to do as much research as I can, I don't know if I can make a solid connection for you, because I believe that Gaius is a very common name for the time. We can see Gaius pop up multiple times in the scripture. We can see Gaius pop up in Acts chapter 19 and verse 29. We can find Gaius pop up in Acts chapter 20 and verse 4. We can find Gaius pop up in Romans chapter 16 and verse 23, and also 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 14. And although I tried to make as many connections as I can, I will be honest and say, I don't know if I can stand before you this evening and definitively say which Gaius we're talking about. But from this letter alone, we can see that Gaius has some quality of walking in truth and also this idea of being generous and hospitable. And in Romans chapter 16 and verse 23, which we just covered recently in our Sunday morning Bible class, it's interesting what it says there in Romans chapter 16. I don't know if we are 100%, maybe somebody will be able to add in some thoughts that I haven't thought about, but in chapter 16 and verse 23, it says, Gaius, my host and the host of the whole church. I tell you, that is interesting terminology. It says, Gaius, my host and the host of the whole church. Well, when we get over to 1 John 3, what we're going to see here in verses 5 through 8 is we're going to see that Gaius is hospitable to Christians and he's hospitable to strangers. And when I read that in Romans chapter 16, I mean, it's very interesting because whoever this Gaius is in Romans chapter 16 is very hospitable. He said he has been my host and is the host of the whole church. That is quite, when you start to think about that is quite high praise, and I think that there perhaps could be a connection made there. But as we look at those first 4 verses in 1 John chapter 3, it says, my beloved Gaius, whom I love in the truth. And we think about the relationship that we have in the brotherhood and how strong that is and how important that is for us. But in verse 2 it says, beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. I think the idea is that Gaius' spiritual health is perhaps better than his physical health. And the idea is that your spiritual health is very, very good, and I hope that your spiritual health matches up with your physical health. I think John wants Gaius to be prospering. He wants good things for Gaius and certainly those around him. But you think about that, if our spiritual health matches our physical health. Does your spiritual health match your physical health? He said, beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. It seems like there's no doubt about Gaius' spiritual health. He says, I hope that your physical health is just like your spiritual health. You know, you think about that in life, I think that you have to be very careful because we see a focus in the scriptures on a priority list. And our priority list, I think, is always on the spiritual over the physical. We see that throughout the Old Testament. We see that into the New Testament, is that there is a focus on the spiritual over the physical. How is your soul doing? How is your soul prospering? I think the idea is he has good spiritual health. Is his physical health matching? Physical health is important, but what is more important? In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, it says for this. It says, for bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that one which is to come. You know, there's a lot of things we can do with our bodies. We can exercise, and the Bible says there, I think in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, you know, there's a lot of good things we can do for our physical bodies. But when it's all said and done, the most important thing, I think, is spiritual things. And there it talks about righteousness. Righteousness is profitable for all things. And it says that is not only good for this life, but the life to come. See, our physical exercise that we do, although it has benefits, and I think that can be proven scientifically, but that has benefits just for this physical life in many ways. But our spiritual health will go on forever. Our spiritual health is not only for this life, but the life to come. And when we look at 3 John, we see this idea, beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. Is our soul prospering? Is our spiritual health in good condition? Verse 3, it says, for I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you. Now this, we start to see this idea that people have heard about Gaius. And in fact, it seems like John has heard about Gaius again and again and again. And what is he hearing? That Gaius is an individual that is faithful and walking in the truth. You know, is that our reputation? Is that our reputation? You know, when I travel to other congregations, many times a lot of your names are brought up. You might not believe that, but when I go to Camden Avenue, and perhaps I'm preaching for a summer series or something like that, people here at Sandyville, their names are brought up. When I go to Hopewell and I help out with GBS, some people's names here at Sandyville are brought up. What's your reputation? I can tell you we have some brethren here that have very good reputations. Reputations of standing for the truth, and they're saying, how does brother so-and-so, how is sister so-and-so, how is that family going at Sandyville? How is their spiritual health? How is their physical health? But it looks like in verse 3, John has heard over and over again from the brethren about Gaius. Gaius has the reputation of walking in the truth. And he says, I have no greater joy than to hear my children walk in truth. You know, there's a great joy running across Christians, but also hearing Christians are living faithfully. My younger brother is dating a girl from Ohio, and he attends Dustin Church of Christ, which I've done a gospel meeting there and I preached there, but he sent me a text just the other week. He said, they were asking about you at Dustin. They were asking about you. They were asking about how you were doing. They were asking about your physical health. They were asking about your spiritual health. They were asking about those things. When we have brothers and sisters in Christ checking up on us and we start to hear good reports, those things bring joy to our hearts. There's nothing that brings more joy than when I preach to a certain congregation and I get to talk to somebody and they say, those people are still faithful. Those people are still finding the good side of faith. Those people are doing what they should be doing. There's very few things that bring joy to my heart like that. Hearing about brothers and sisters in Christ, ones that he has separated by distance, but are still faithful. And I think John and Gaius have been separated, although I think that they have crossed paths. But we have this idea, I have no greater joy than to hear my children walk in the truth. So in this first few verses, we see a strong connection here between Gaius and John, and we start to see this idea of that Gaius is on a good spiritual track in relation to the truth. And if we think about our relationships with our brothers and sisters in Christ, do we say the same things? Are we concerned about these same things? Are we concerned about their physical health? Yes. But are we concerned about their spiritual health? And you kind of see that in this introduction as it unfolds. Then I believe in verses 5 through 7, we're really going to see Gaius' hospitality. We start to see his helping hand. We see in the first few verses that he's walking in truth, and we see some really things that are complementary of him. I greatly rejoice when brethren come and testify of the truth that is in you. We certainly see that idea. Verses 5 through 7, as we continue on, it says, "Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well, because they went forth for his namesake, taking nothing from the Gentiles." I think we start to see a little bit of not only is Gaius walking in truth, but what does he do to serve the church? What is he doing to help the church? And I think really we see this idea of being hospitable to individuals that are faithful, the brethren, but also strangers. If that Gaius is helping individuals, I believe he is being hospitable. And if we could connect it to Romans chapter 16, you know, we get this idea of perhaps we have Gaius being a good host. Gaius is a good host, not only to brethren, but he's a good host to strangers. And that's a question for us as New Testament Christians. Actually, when you read through the qualifications for an elder, one of them is being hospitable. And we think about that. There's a lot of things that fall underneath the umbrella of being hospitable, being welcoming, helping, assisting, bringing people in, and giving those the people that assistance. And I think that that was one of the things that, Gaius had a talent for, if you will, but not only a talent, but a willingness, an opportunity, and fulfilled those needs as they came upon. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for the stranger who have become witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in this manner, worthy of God, you do well. I think there's this idea of receiving brethren and strangers and then also sending them on their journey. And culturally, many times people would go with them into the border of the country, or they would go with them a mile, and they would go for a certain distance with those individuals. But we understand that Christians should be hospitable. I believe Gaius was. And I think he's being commended for it. And while he's being commended, I think he's also being used as an example and saying, hey, if you do this, you do well. Now we're going to see Dionysius is going to be almost the exact opposite of this. I think when preachers came by, when Christians came by, when individuals came by, Gaius would do what he could to help these individuals, and he would go with them on their journey as he could and try to support them. And then he'd go back to home base, if you will, and try to do it again as he had opportunity. Are you hospitable? In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2, it says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels." And of course, I think that goes back all the way back to Genesis, and we have Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah, and we have those angels that come, and they come into town, and what does Lot do? He welcomes the men. Perhaps we could also think about Abraham, but there's many examples in the Old Testament where we see hospitality. Hospitality. As Christians, are we hospitable? In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 9 says, "Be hospitable to one another without grumbling." In Romans chapter 12 and verse 13, it says, "Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality." You know, during this time in the church, as we start to think about the context, there was a lot of persecution. And a lot of Christians were on the run. And I think a lot of Christians needed a safe place to stay. And I think Gaius was one of those that was a safe house, if you will, and made sure that those Christians and even strangers were taken care of, and then as they were traveling on, he would do whatever he could to assist them. You know, in many ways, I think this is a great challenge of the church in the United States. Because as we live in a culture where we have a lot of independence and we have a lot of prosperity, I think a lot of us like to stand on our two feet and say, "I'm good, I'm independent." But I think there's a danger of that. And we see a danger of it in the Old Testament is as the Israelites became more prosperous, not only did they turn away from God, but I think they turned away from each other. And I think hospitality is one of the things that glues us together. It's one of those things that keeps us together. And I think in the United States, this is a challenge, because I think we almost have to push each other and try to say, how can we almost extend out and reach out and try to help each other? Because I think that hospitality glue is so important. That love, that encouragement, that being around for one another, I think it is a challenge in today's day and age. But without hospitality, the church would die in this time. And you know what? I don't know if it's so dissimilar from today. Perhaps the church will die when we lose hospitality. Perhaps the church will die when we don't have the same type of heart that God has had, welcoming and faithful individuals and strangers. Do you love brothers and sisters that you haven't even met yet? You know, there could be a time, I don't know what the future is of our country, and I don't know what the future is for gospel meetings and things. I know the word will always be proclaimed, and we need it to be proclaimed more and more. But, you know, a lot of times, preachers, when they come to town, they'll be offered hospitality. But I think because of our independence and all of our ability to travel, a lot of times, preachers won't take up the local congregation on that hospitality. And you think about that. I think we do have this problem in the United States. It's so much prosperity has actually almost driven us apart instead of driving us together. Persecution will drive the church together. We'll need dioceses if persecution comes to the United States. We'll need dioceses. We'll need them. And if our country keeps turning in the way it is, it seems like morally, there'll be more opportunities to be hospitable. Because do you really want to put the preacher in the local hotel when you know things are going on at that hotel, in that place? There's going to be opportunities for hospitality. I believe there'll be opportunities for hospitality. And when that call comes, will we be ready? You know, in Matthew chapter 25, we have that judgment scene. We have that judgment scene, and we have a splitting that's happening. But in verses 37 through 40, it says, then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you a drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, surely I say to you, inasmuch as you did to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Hospitality is a Christian idea, and we see that Gaius is setting a powerful example of opening, I believe, his home to the brethren, but also opening his home to strangers. And I think the way the terminology is that we all know what Gaius does. Do you not think everybody knew what Gaius did? When you look at verse 3, it says, for I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you. A lot of brethren, not just one brethren, is talking about Gaius and talking about how he stands in truth. But then look at verse 6. It says, who has borne witness of your love before the church. It seems like this is well known. Well known, Gaius has a reputation of being hospitable and standing in the truth. I think it was obvious that he was hospitable to preachers that were passing through, even if he had not known them before. I think Gaius would say, what can I do to help? What can I do to support? What can I do to be hospitable? I believe he had a good reputation for this. And I don't think that this is really a brag in any way. This is just who Gaius was. And this is not him talking about himself. This is John saying, I know about you. I know that you walk in truth. I know how you've been hospitable. What's your reputation? Do you have a reputation of being hospitable, welcoming, friendly to those that are around you? Certainly what an opportunity is when we have the opportunity to be hospitable, but also be benevolent in many ways. It's an opportunity. It really opens up the door for evangelism. We are not going to solve the world's poor problem, unfortunately. Jesus said the poor are always going to be with you. We can't solve the world's poor problem, but when we help and we extend to helping men, what we're really doing is we're opening up the door to evangelism. We're opening up the door to something more valuable than those physical things. We're trying to open up the door to truth. that we can study with individuals, that we can sit down and get the Bible open. And people are more receptive to that when we're hospitable, when we try to help and assist. We're trying to open that door to evangelism. That's what we're trying to do. How many people are won to Christ by Gaius' hospitality? These strangers that stopped by that he tried to help and assist. I don't have the answer to that, but I do think that our hospitality and our benevolence certainly opens the door to these things. You start to look at what is said here. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you do well. How can we be more hospitable? How can we try to open up these doors to help people so that we can really win them over to Christ? You know, I think we do many things here at Sandyville. You know, I think about those college baskets. Now, I'm just saying, I never received a college basket quite like that. But what do you think the roommates think when one of our young Christians, you know, gets one of those baskets? You know what I mean? They're like, what kind of church family do you have? You know? Yeah, we're very loving. We love our college students. And we want that to be expressed in some way. And I know it doesn't always have to be expressed in that way, but I think about the baskets. I think that's a way of being hospitable. I think that was a beautiful, wonderful thing that came out of the women's group. But I'm just thinking about any roommate that saw that basket. I mean, where did that come from? Who did that? Oh, that's your church family? Wow. Wow. I mean, it would make people think. And I think we have to have these acts of love and kindness for one another that people think, wow, something's going on there. You know, I think certainly we can make meals for widows and things like that, people going through hard times, but I don't think it'd be a bad thing if on occasion we just make a meal for one another. Because these type of things aren't done like they used to be done. You take some people by surprise. What? You got a meal? You got a meal from the church when you were sick? That might be a strange thing. There's a lot of things now where I think because our nation is so independent and there's so much prosperity, things aren't done the way they used to be done. And if we do some of those things underneath the umbrella of hospitality, who knows what doors we might open? Who knows what doors we might open? Because they're like, what? Somebody just made a meal for you at the church and they just brought it over to your house and you're inviting me over? Yeah, sure. You know, I think about funerals. We've had a few funerals recently here. I think it's hospitable when we open up the building. I think it is. And I think we've actually touched, I mean, in my immediate, I think we've touched some people recently. I think we have. And I think it's because we are hospitable when we opened up the building. And we said, you know what? You need a place to hold this funeral. You need a place to have this. Hey, we'll open it up. Not only will we open it up, but we'll make a meal for you. All women are touching people. I think they are. We're all working together as a team, but when we're welcoming and we have these opportunities, I mean, I've got to see it here. I think it's one of our strengths here at Sandyville, actually. I think a lot of other congregations have lost it. And I think that we do have to keep pushing forward because our world is prosperous. I think about the supper club, the supper group. I got to see a picture on Facebook, all of them smiling around the table. You know, you think about that. Those are good, wholesome things. Those are good hospitality things. Those are things that show that we're a family, that we love one another, and it's a great opportunity to bring people in. People might not come to service. They might come to supper club. People might not come to services, but if you're making a meal for a member of the church and they invite somebody else over to their house and they say, hey, the church made this meal, you know, why don't you just come over too? Opportunities can be opened through hospitality. I think that's what Gaius was doing. In John chapter 13, verses 24 and 25, Jesus says, a new command I give you, that you love one another as I've loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, by the love you have for one another. Are expressions of love. Many times they are physical, yes. But when those get out, when people see those can have an effect on the world that's very, very special. And any time we do those things, I think it really, truly does open up the door to evangelism. Look at verse 8. It says, we therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. Who should we receive? I think it's talking about preachers, but I think it also, I mean, in the context, it does talk about strangers. But it says, therefore, we ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers of the truth. I think being hospitable, we are workers of the truth. When our ladies make a meal, I think they're becoming fellow workers in anything that comes out of that. Whenever a preacher comes to town and there's a meal made for that preacher, that is being a fellow worker. Now, I think that there's an interesting comparison to be made between 2 John and 3 John. Because in 2 John, it talks about receiving a false teacher. In 2 John, only one chapter there, verse 10, it says, if anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house nor greet him. He who greets him shares in his evil deeds. If we are welcoming of a false teacher, there's this idea that you're kind of helping out that false teacher. If a false teacher came to town and I said, hey, here's $100, you just keep teaching your false doctrine. You know, I mean, there needs to be a separation there when it comes to supporting false teachers. But it says if you are really supportive of a false teacher, you share in their deeds. But here in 3 John, we have almost the opposite. If you support somebody who's standing for the truth, if you support somebody who's doing good things, you also share in those deeds. And I think we see that in 3 John. It says, we therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers for the truth. You know, there's a lot of work that can be accomplished together. And I can almost... You know, every one that has been baptized in the last couple of years, I think it's such a sad point that many times it kind of ends with the preacher. Because similar how in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, it talks about, you know, you got Paul and Apollos, and it says Apollos watered, and we have this process. We have this idea of a team effort. Everyone that's been baptized in the last couple of years, I can name 5 people connected to that person. In fact, it's interesting when you start to try to connect the dots. You're like, well, this person invited him to the Bible study. This person tried to get him a meal. This person was welcoming when they came into services. This person sat by them. This person tried to talk to them. This person tried. We're a team together. Just like it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 through 9, it's talking about the teaching of the truth there, but you've got this idea that I planted and Apollos watered, but God gave an increase. We collectively can do many good things by being hospitable and welcoming and trying to bring people to Christ as best we can. Hospitality can lead people to Christ. And I think Gaius has a really good example here in terms of standing on the truth, but also I think in verses 5, 6, and 7, it's giving us this idea that he is very welcoming, very generous, very friendly, and trying to do those things to really help not only the church, but I think help win people to Christ. Are you hospitable? How could you be more hospitable this week? I think we do very well here at Sandyville, but certainly there's always something more that we can do. And in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24, it says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly. The more friendly that we can be, the more people we can lead to Christ. I believe that. I think Gaius certainly had that quality. Perhaps this evening you need to become a New Testament Christian, or perhaps you need the prayers of the church. We would love to help you in any way that we can this evening. If you're subject to invitation in any way, we ask you to please come as we stand as we sing.